Hello?
Yes, hello, hello, I hear you.
All right, Don Allen?
Hey, oh, wow, it works, you're there, great, great.
Yeah, yeah, your co-host here, Ari Edwards, man, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, sir, yes. I was working out some technical difficulties there.
Okay.
Beginning, and I was playing this Johnny Mathis.
I heard it the first time I called, and then I got clicked off. But, yeah, I heard Johnny, sounded smooth, man.
Okay, okay, I'm glad. I'm doing great. I was just telling the people a little bit about you, that you are the, yeah, I like that. So I was just telling people that I have a blog, you have a blog, your blog is called The Minneapolis Story. It's located at www.theminneapolisstory.com, and you can read current events here in the Twin Cities as well as national and world events. And also I have a blog called the Independent Business News Network, and also say Radical Black. So. Would you like to add anything to that? Because you're live on the air on Blog Talk Radio.
Well, you know, also we have a column in the largest black newspaper in the state of Minnesota and one of the oldest in the country, the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder, founded by the late and legendary Cecil Newman. And then, of course, we also are the author of a couple books. And I think we've been quoted here in Minnesota alone at least 10,000 times, including this morning. And a situation involving the African-American fire chief here in our city. So we've been doing this for a long time, you know. First started writing a column for the old Twin City Courier about 35 years ago, the late Mary Kyle, one of the great journalists in this town also. So that's kind of just some of the background. We are a graduate of the Alinsky School of Community Organization, or community organizing, and in fact, we feel honored because that's the same program and school that the current president of the United States, Barack Obama, graduated from 30 years after I did. But University of Syracuse, we came out in 1966, and so, you know, we've been around a long time, Don. as you know.
Mm-hmm. Yes, as I know. So where do we want to start at today? We have a lot on our plate and a lot of things to talk about. And I like to let people know you can call. They can call in at 1-347-426-3904 if they'd like to join in on the conversation. And this is On Point with Ronald A. Edwards and Don Allen. So, Mr. Edwards, where do we want to start today?
Well, let me just, to get our listening audience in play, if you will, just kind of want to do a little bit of the international piece, if you will. You want to take a close look at a very, very serious situation on the Korean Peninsula. A international panel maintains that the North Koreans torpedoed a South Korean destroyer a couple months ago. The North Koreans have denied that. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton talking in terms that there have to be consequences for the North Koreans. North Koreans indicating in a very belligerent manner, which is consistent with their philosophy, that they will not tolerate any retaliatory action against them, and that if there is a retaliatory action, it could lead to full-scale war. Now, what's happened in this situation, the South Korean army is about at 750,000. There are about 30,000 American troops along the DMZ, the demilitarized zone. But they are facing off against better than 1 million North Koreans.
Oh, yeah.
Armed to the teeth with nuclear capabilities. So I would just suggest as a part of our program today, our inaugural program, by the way,
yes,
that on the international scene, you certainly want to take a look at that. The other thing is some dynamics going on in Iran, where the mothers of the three Americans being held have been held for the last 8-9 months in Iran on alleged spy charges, do have high expectations that their children may be released to them as they leave Iran. That's something to take a look at. So on the international scene, then, locally, we've got what seems to be a kind of an Amos and Andy show going on with respect to BP, British Petroleum, and the many fibs and fabrications that they're telling about the oil spill in the Gulf just south of Louisiana.
Oh, that's a handful. That's a handful. what's your take on the oil spill? Because I know I was watching Channel 2 here in Minneapolis, which is the equivalent to like public radio, it's public television, and they were actually had cameras down there underwater because BP, I guess, had been not really truthful in full disclosure on the amount of oil that was spilling out from underneath the ocean.
Absolutely. The danger here politically is that it's very interesting to watch the posture of the conservatives in this country, who basically are very pro-big business, as we know, anti-Barack Obama, as we know, who have to be real cautious on how they respond and support. You know, Rand Paul, who upset the Republican standard bearer or nominee in Kentucky, made a rather interesting statement that Barack Obama is being too hard on BP. But as you just pointed out, BP has gotten caught in a number of lies. What has been amazing, Don, to your question, is the lack of technology that does not appear to be at hand. Now, article in the paper here in the Twin Cities, the Minneapolis Star and Tribune, indicating of all things, the person who may have an answer to this, Kevin Costner, the legendary and renowned actor who has been working on a solution, has spent about $25 million of his money over the last 15 years. Now, I find that to be just amazing when you talk in terms of the hundreds of billions that the petroleum industry says that they spend on research and development, R&D. They have been totally incapable or unwilling to cap that well and do what is necessary. And what's happened is that the ecology, or ecosystem, as they like to say, both Louisiana, Mississippi, and certainly Florida, is right now in jeopardy. And they're now attempting to criticize the Obama administration for not stepping in, Yet these are the same people that talk in terms that they're opposed to big government, okay? And so I'm just a little puzzled, but to your question, that is a very dangerous situation also, particularly with respect to the ecology.
Yeah, and also speaking of Louisiana, there's been a lot of outcry down there from the people in New Orleans, actually, because I guess this oil spill is really affecting them. I'm looking at, currently while we're talking, I'm kind of surfing the web and seeing all the articles on the Gulf oil spill, and President Obama appoints a oil spill commission.
Yes.
And and so it's a lot going on with that, and it'll be interesting to find out here what happens in the near future.
Well, one of the things I think is important for us to say here on this program is that I do not accept the contention that this oil spill, as it pertains to human damage, ranks with Katrina, because thousands of people were lost in Katrina, and a significant number of that were African Americans. And I've talked to a number of friends and associates in New Orleans, in the Baton Rouge area, and they're really resentful of the fact that that comparison would be made. Now, certainly there's a problem with the environment, the ecology, and et cetera, but this does not yet reach the threshold of what happened to a couple thousand people who lost their lives while President George Bush flew back and forth over New Orleans and looked down at them in the water and on the rooftops and et cetera, and really didn't do anything for a significant period of time. I think that the Obama administration has been fairly responsible. As they said, I saw a program early this morning also here in the Twin Cities and on PBS, and they were talking in terms that there are legal questions that they have to be concerned with, because there are certain rights that a private corporation such as BP has with respect to how it conducts and runs its business. And so, legally you have to give them that latitude, unless you're prepared to declare a state of emergency. And the federal government intercedes. But then, folks are talking about, President Barack Obama has been irresponsible.
Okay, again, I'd like to give the call-in number here to On Point with Ronald A. Edwards and Don Allen. We invite you to call in at 1-347-426-3904 if you have any concerns or anything you'd like to talk about. And moving right on, Mr. Edwards, when we talk a lot, we talk, especially in the black community or African-American community, whichever you prefer, we talk about things that kind of go by and, people kind of forget them. And one thing that seems to keep creeping in its head out of the ashes is Haiti. And then CNN World News just had an article today, Haiti trying to avoid past mistakes as rebuilding begins. And it goes into detail talking about that shops are opening and they're buying everything from vegetables to voodoo flags, which I find very interesting in the first place. And why CNN would, release something like that is just, kind of a reflection of them, being kind of an unwanted stepchild in the beginning. So,
absolutely.
So with that said, I mean, what are your, some of these, I'm just going to ask you, just some general world questions before we dig into the local stuff here. But it seems like, Haiti has, dropped down in the news, except for an article here and there. And you don't really know what's going on, how we're addressing that. When I say we, I mean the United States. And what should have been done there in the first place after?
Well, first of all, and regrettably, And it's ironic with respect to the historical importance. I mean, Haiti was really the first true democracy in the Northern Hemisphere. I mean, with respect to Toussaint Louverture. And Haiti was enjoying and understanding democracy when, people were still talking about colonializing Mexico, and the United States was still fighting possible British expansion west of the Mississippi. But some tragic things have happened to the Haitian nation and to the Haitian people over the last 100 and some years. And the United States has a direct responsibility for the dismantling of the democratic institutions of Haiti. Now, since the tragedy, the earthquake, which just devastated Port-au-Prince, which is the capital of Haiti, and cost certainly in excess of 200,000 lives, if not more, I think in some respects, the United States, led by its president, appointing the former President Clinton, former President Bush, to go in to help coordinate and provide spirit, if you will, to the relief effort, I think the United States and certainly other nations around the world. I mean, I was fascinated by the European nations, Canada, Germany, France, Switzerland, China, and et cetera, who immediately came to the aid. But you got to remember, we've had a disturbing number of natural catastrophes, which makes you kind of wonder. There's a movie out called 2012, which talks about the final days of the earth. And in some ways, I don't know if that's a self-fulfilling prophecy, because we have had some real serious situations with respect to earthquakes, tsunamis, mine, you know, accidents, and et cetera. And you kind of wonder, you know, if this old planet of ours is kind of sending a signal. But Haiti is a tragedy that was in the making. It is a tragedy that continues to go on. But the Haitian people are very resourceful, and I think that's what we have to know and understand and appreciate as Americans, if you will, that they certainly have the capabilities. They've been through hardship before, and they're just going to kind of suck it up, if you will, toughen it up, if you will, and pull themselves together. And that's the prayer that you have to offer for Haiti. Now, what additional things can be done? I think a lot can be done. One of the things that has happened is that Haiti has to be more than just a tourist attraction, okay, for folk to go there and look at the little quaint black people of Haiti. There are some things that I think can be done with respect to, though the natural resources of Haiti have basically been depleted over the years, I think that there are some manufacturing things to be done. Example, if you can close down a Polaris plant in a town in Wisconsin and reestablish a plant in Mexico, then you could do some things with respect to industry in Haiti.
Yes, absolutely right. They need to. I'm just looking perusing this article. It's just like I'm not really shocked anymore, but. I mean, something has to change and be different in Haiti, and to make sure that, you know, the people of Haiti, which was the first real democracy in North America, as you said, something happens positive and that they go ahead and reestablish and grow bigger and grow better. So moving right along, again, we had a couple callers. I was just screening them a minute ago, but I want to kind of bring it to the local level. I was I got up this morning, as I normally do, about 6:30, and I pulled up the Minneapolis Star and Tribune, and there was an article in there.
The Johannesburg Times.
Yeah, the Johannesburg Times. and there was an article in there, Minneapolis to revamp its fire code checks, and you know, this is in result. 7 weeks ago, the deadly fire, they're saying it's the deadliest fire in 24 years in Minneapolis. Six people, I think, were killed. And this has been an ongoing saga while we bring this locally to the Twin Cities and talk to the many listeners right now that we have connecting with us and online on point. And I think they need a little bit of background and explanation on this.
Well, and certainly we would be happy to do that. That article, by the way, does identify your co-host as a person who has had a long history with the fire department as a appointed overseer of the federal court. For 20 years, we sat as a 10-member committee, and we served as chairman for 17 of those 20 years. It is an ugly situation, and I think in some respects it may begin to come to a head on Monday. That fire of April 2nd, Don Samuels, Gary Schiff, two Democratic councilmen from the 5th and the 9th wards are saying now, Elizabeth Glidden also quoted as saying, Democrat 8th ward, saying that they knew there were some problems and they'd been looking at this and et cetera, and I'm just not quite sure that that's as accurate as it should be. But what is troubling here, Mr. Allen, is the decision to kind of play the race card, which is not unusual in this town, against the administration of Chief Alex Jackson, who is the first African-American chief of this department. whose staff has a significant representation of African Americans. His deputy chief, Sherry Penn, the highest-ranking African American female in the department. His fire marshal, Mr. Tyner, and etc. I began to become disturbed as I watched the animosity begin to emerge, and then kind of some poison knives being plunged into the back of the department, primarily by Councilmember Schiff, who I think made his feelings well known in the paper this morning when he indicated that Chief Jackson was clearly incompetent. That's a pretty strong declaration, if you will, when there is no specific evidence that confirms that. In fact, the Minnesota State Fire Marshal, who is, you know, kind of the czar and the guru of things pertaining to, you know, fires and tragedies and et cetera, it did an examination asked by Chief Jackson, the first chief ever in the state of Minnesota to ask the state fire marshal to critique a fire tragedy, if you will. And the fire marshal said that certainly there were some things that could be done. By the way, all of those things that he cited, and we have the report here in our studio, the fire marshal indicated that there were some things that could be done, but many of them were in place and were known long before Chief Jackson, who has only been on the job a little over a year and three-fourths, became chief, okay? And so I'm you know, greatly disappointed in the Democratic, you know, dominated Minneapolis City Council in playing this kind of game, playing the race card. It's one of the reasons we made the statement in the paper this morning that not only is Chief Jackson competent, but he is compassionate. Because I got to tell you, Don, one of the things that's being, you know, hinted at by the members of the council and Mr. Schiff is that somewhere or another, this African-American fire chief was not sensitive to problems maybe facing the white population. Now, I know that sounds utterly absurd and ridiculous, but that's really what has been at play. And there will be a joint committee hearing on Monday morning, if I'm not mistaken. And their strategy, by the way, that they've been talking about for about 4 weeks, unbeknownst to the general public, is to make Chief Alex Jackson the scapegoat. The newspaper was accurate this morning when it indicated that they intend to strip the Minneapolis Fire Department and the Jackson administration of the authority and responsibility to do inspections and send it back over to regulatory services, which, interestingly enough, is under the supervision of a former chief of the department, Rocco Forte, who I've known for many years, served on the committee with me, the federal committee, about a decade ago. And so, to your question, I think it's well put, it's well timely. The thing that's also troubling, Mr. Allen, is that the absolute silence from the so-called black leadership of our city.
Exactly. I have to chime in on that because I'm looking at the paragraph in the Johannesburg Times, which is the Minneapolis Star and Tribune, as we, you know it online. But it says here that, and this looks like an emasculation of Chief Jackson, because it says here, Mr. Schiff, Councilmember Schiff says, "I have ultimate confidence that the firefighters who are properly trained and scheduled can do this work." And the next sentence, he says, I don't have the confidence that the chief can be effective in administrating the program. So
yes,
this is Jerry Schiff's quote.
Yes, and that's what I was making reference to just in the last number of minutes, because coming from an elected public official who, by the charter of the city of Minneapolis, has significant authority for the management of this city, for him to make that kind of statement, particularly before a public meeting of the council, in which they will do what you know I've known for about 4 weeks they were going to do, but to say that the chief is incompetent. Now, this chief was just reappointed 3 months ago, okay?
Yes.
And if Mr. Schiff felt that Mr. Jackson or Chief Jackson was so incompetent, then he should have spoke up. This is certainly a council, as an example, that never speaks anything negatively about the chief of police of this city, who's white.
Never.
And this is a police department that keeps a scorecard on how many black folk they beat and kill, okay? And
yes.
Yet when his confirmation, Chief Dolan's confirmation hearing was taking place a couple months ago, it was like a honeymoon, if you will. In fact, if I remember correctly, Mr. Schiff was part of a group of councilmen that had nothing but the best to say about the chief. And, of course, they never talk in terms of the pain that is being suffered and felt by the African-American and other communities of color. So I think you can begin to at least rationally and logically say that there's a race element, unfortunately, here with respect to Gary Schiff's attack, a very egregious attack on Chief Jackson this morning.
Yes, yes, I'm seeing that in detail. There's a lot of comments here, too. There are people that are totally in support of Chief Jackson and his administration. And it also says, one comment here says, shame on you for using this strategy for a political gain. So, yeah, this just seems, you know, it's to be continued, but we're going to have to watch this closely. Now, you were hinting at something a minute ago before I kind of asked you some questions or read this article here. Mr. Edwards, we have, what, the Minneapolis Urban League? We have the NAACP here in Minneapolis. We have the Minnesota Council on Churches, and
right.
A number of quote unquote community spokespersons. And it seems like the Star and Tribune, Johannesburg Time, has called you out of all these self appointed leaders to give a quote in the daily paper on Saturday about this issue. And again, these people, they continue, we'll get into that a little bit more later, but they continue to be mute. I mean, what is your feelings on that?
Well, first of all, the decision by the Star Tribune to have me as the only person on the outside quoted had to do, of course, with my long standing history with the department as a special master for the department or for the federal court. But beyond that, I think that leadership in our community needs to be a little concerned that the white media has basically reached the conclusion that these folks don't know what's going on. And I can tell you this, when the fire marshal's report last month disseminated, if you will, was put on file, I found out I was the only African-American journalist or anything else that actually went to fire department, and then I was routed up to the communications department in the coordinator's office and actually went down and got a copy of the report.
Wow.
In fact, it was the genesis for my own column in the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder, in which the headline was Why the Rush to Judgment, because I wanted to be balanced, if you will, in my writing with respect to this unnecessary and questionable attack upon Chief Jackson. If you read the fire marshal's report, and I would suggest to our listeners that they may want to do that, I think that they can get that report now online, as well as the joint report done by Chief Jackson and the head of regulatory services, Forte, that when you take a look at it, I don't see reference by the state fire marshal or by the two individuals, though Chief Jackson was certainly one of the ones that participated in the report that will be bantered around on Monday. There is nothing there, Mr. Allen, in which implies that Chief Alex Jackson is an incompetent black man. I mean, I'm trying to get a feel for where Mr. Schiff and some others on the council are coming from. I mean, I have to say to you, as a person who presided over the fire department as part of a consent decree for 20 years of my life. And by the way, we were not compensated. There were no provisions for compensation. We did not want compensation. There were six community members and four members of the staff of the city of Minneapolis, two from civil service and two from the fire department. But, you know, I'm just always bothered by the fact that there has to be some kind of compensation. There has to be a bag of gold or silver for this leadership to speak out and come front and center. And I think that's the reason why members of the council, though it appears that the mayor, and I've been a longtime critic of the mayor, but it seems on the record the mayor has been supportive of his chief, but there are a number of council members who are very comfortable with the kinds of statements that they were preparing as it pertains to Chief Jackson. Now, going back to what I was just saying in the last couple of seconds, neither the state fire marshal or the information gathered by the experts, which led to the report that is signed off on by Chief Jackson and Director Forte, indicates anything, Mr. Allen, that would imply that Alex Jackson is incompetent. But yet the Star Tribune, you know, made it a point to highlight that, and Gary Schiff certainly got his blows in, if you will, on basically what was a defensive individual. But I have to tell you, I think that for political reasons, Chief Jackson did the right thing by telling through the communications department that he would have no comment until after the hearing on Monday.
Okay, well, yeah, and that was a good professional move by him, you know, in spite of Schiff's jumping the gun on that. Now, I want to get in, if it's okay with you, I'd like to get into the local leadership here. I was reading author Toni Morrison, who said, black people are the victims of enormous amount of violence. None of these things can take place without the complicity of the people who run the schools and the city.
Mm.
End of quote. On Friday, May 21st, they found two black men dead in the 3300 block of Russell Avenue North. Early reports are kind of sketchy and it's kind of sensitive, but again, we have another incident here in the Twin Cities where, you know, I know in Atlanta, New York, Los Angeles, Chicago, Denver, Miami, Houston, and those places, you would have some kind of element of the civil rights spokespersons or leaders in that town, you know, addressing a situation like this and attempting to resolve and console the families. And I just don't understand personally what's going on here in the city of Minneapolis with this kind of, you know, there's some corruptions. I allege that there's some corruption going on. I also allege that, you know, if these people are, they don't speak on any issues unless, you know, it's hustling for dollars.
Absolutely.
And I actually wrote that in one of my columns because I was upset, you know, with the number one, the attack on the Minneapolis' first black fire chief, Alex Zach Jackson. Number two, we don't hear a whistle out of anyone. I mean, we have a local black radio station. We have a Fifth Ward, North Minneapolis, Jamaican American or African American, black American, whatever you want to call him, city councilman. We have a number of, we even have a black newspaper in North Minneapolis. And you cannot see, read, or hear about any of these current events that has economically handcuffed, for lack of a better word, the black community here in the Twin Cities, especially in North Minneapolis. And I guess my question is, or my concern would be, I mean, how do we address that? Is it going to take a radical move of some kind of protest? These people don't want to come to the table. Go ahead.
Don, I think you're absolutely correct on this. Let us, for the purposes of our listening audience, so that they have a full comfort level with the fact that we're just not sitting here talking without knowledge. Right. The incident on Russell is tragic in many respects. One of the African Americans, the owner of the home, and I repeat that, he wasn't a renter, he was the owner of the home. He was a small businessman. Unfortunately, he had been the target of a couple of attempted invasions, if you will. What is peculiar about this, and I'm appreciative of the fact that we have platforms, and I don't apologize for it, that the police allegedly were there just about 10:30 that night or thereabouts, according to their report, and they maintained that they dispersed the crowd. Well, that's not true, okay? They came. I'm not sure that they actually came into the house. The Star Tribune in the editorial in their edition this morning tried to imply that. My sources indicate that probably is not true. Okay. Beyond that, there were shots heard between 1 a.m. and 4 a.m. The feeling is that the two victims were executed in between that point in time. It wasn't until another 5 hours or thereabouts, 9 o'clock, 9:15, yesterday morning, that they were actually found.
I'm sorry.
Go right ahead.
We have some people calling in too. So when you get done there, we'd like to.
Because it's always important for the listeners to get in. Let me just rapidly move through that. To your specific question with respect to the leadership. Some of the leaders themselves have problems with some of the organizations that operate on our street, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
And as an example, gunmen being intercepted, getting ready to go into a church doing a funeral a couple months ago. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, U2 has identified you as having some excellent film footage which I know some of the leaders were very resentful of the fact that you were there and recorded, including the arrest of the gunman on their way into the church there in North Minneapolis. But one of the things that no one talks about in this town is that some of these leaders do not have the best of relationships with some of the young men who are a part of the gangs and the organizations, however you want to refer to them. And so they are not able to bring about the kind of continuity. There used to be a time when we used to go through the motions of pretending to hold conferences on violence. Now, just before we go to our callers, let me just say this. I find it interesting. I was told early this morning by reliable sources that tomorrow at 2:30, some of the ministerial group, coalition, et cetera, are going to reintroduce their crack squad, if you will, and take back Broadway. 2:30 tomorrow in North Minneapolis. That's the information that they put out.
I have to be over there with my camera and see what this squad is all about.
Yes. That's the last time that they were out, they showed up over in what is called Tangletown, and a couple of African Americans got shot. But go ahead.
That's going to be bad here. Let's see here. Hello, caller. You're live on the air on point with Ron Edwards and Don Allen.
Hello.
Hello. Yes, you're live on the air with... On a point with Ron Edwards and Don Allen. Go ahead.
Yeah, you guys, I like this radio here. It's really real good information.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. You have a question?
Appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm listening to what you guys are saying. Where is your NAACP at? Do you guys have one there?
Mr. Allen, you want me to deal with that as a former member of the NAACP? The NAACP here, sir, is basically non-functional. The St. Paul NAACP, under the leadership of Nick Khalif, has been fairly aggressive. The Minneapolis NAACP has basically not been heard from since all of that Leave No Child Left Behind money kind of you know evaporated. The NAACP, and it's really kind of tragic because the head of the NAACP is a law enforcement officer himself. He's a deputy sheriff in Dakota County. And
Booker Hodges. Yes.
Mr. Hodges, who I've known for a number of years. I don't know what the reason is. The NAACP has an exec committee. They're supposed to have a political action committee. They're supposed to have the power to create committees to deal with what Mr. Allen was saying just minutes ago, the unchecked violence that is across our city. Let me just give you an example, caller. In the last 3 to 4 Sundays in downtown Minneapolis, there have been serious confrontations as well as shootings, and in fact, a couple of African Americans were shot in the vicinity of Augie's just in the last 48 hours. I mean, it's just wild. In fact, downtown Minneapolis has become a free fire zone, if you will. But to your specific question, where is the NAACP? As Mr. Allen said earlier, where is the Urban League? Where is the Council of Churches? Where is the Coalition of Churches? Where is the Council on Black Minnesotans, which is a state a state created? I don't know, okay? My sense is basically they don't come out after dark.
Well, I read Mr. Booker Hodges' article in a Spokesman Recorder, I think 30 days, 60 days ago, 45 days, about quote-unquote black leaders receiving money from different entities. Those guys haven't responded back yet. I wonder what's going on.
Mr. Allen, you want to take that one, I'll just back you up?
I will love to take that because that is something that, you know, on my news network, I kind of write about that quite a bit. And some of those individuals that I actually saw today at the DFL endorsing convention for the Minneapolis Public School Board at large walked by me and wouldn't even say hello. And because I have asked, you know, I says, okay, if you're with the Minnesota Black Council of Churches or Coalition or whatever you want to be called this year, and you have no tax records, I can't find your 990s, but you've received, according to Booker's research and what's online, over $4 to $5 million in the last 4 to 5 years. What are you doing? Who are you helping? And then, I mean, these people, they don't, there's no one governing them to hold them accountable. They know that the people in the black community, almost some of the people in the black community, almost give them a celebratory status or celebrity status. And there's no one to hold them accountable. So what we have to do is we have to put out this factual documented data out to the public. which makes him upset. I mean, and just to get into a little bit of detail here, I know we have some callers holding. I'll definitely get to you. Just hold on, please. Thanks. But what has happened is last year I went to a editor's roundtable meeting, and there just happened to be a white gentleman who is the head of the census for coming to Minneapolis and getting to know the black community and talking to the different media outlets and minority ethnic newspapers, radio stations, television stations, to see how they could spread the word about the census. Well, at that point, I had a news network with about 250,000 subscribers. That's how strong it was. And I don't charge for any advertising. I don't even take any advertising, but I always, you know, put up a good story, you know, to let people know what's going on. And as soon as I walked into the restaurant and sat down, a local North Minneapolis publisher, you know, told this guy he works for the CIA or the FBI. He's here to destroy the black community, a la Mr. Ron Edwards, my co-host. And so I found that really unusual, but that's kind of the thing that goes on. No one wants to deal with the facts or the many different variables and derivatives that are going on in this area among what I call the notorious Northside Seven, which I also label as poverty pimps, who get paid, who come to the table if there's dollars there, but you don't see any actions. And that goes on from the African-American Men's Project, the Urban League, and a few other things. But, caller, we appreciate you calling, and we'll go
ahead. If I could, before we let the caller go, Mr. Allen, one slight correction. I mean, we want to make sure we lay out everything, and we do no injustice to anyone, including Mr. Hodges. Actually, my co-host said 5 years. Actually, Mr. Hodges, and I was rather surprised, Mr. Hodges actually went back 14 years. Mr. Hodges, you go back and take a look at his article in the Spokesman Recorder over a month ago, he went back into the archives, and sometimes some of our leaders need to maybe get a better understanding about, you know, cyberspace. He went back to 1995 to Project Resurrection. If go back and do your research, caller, if you would. And he went back to a city council meeting in 1996 when this group began to receive its first payments from the city. And so Mr. Hodges did do his research, and his research went back as far as 1994, 95, 96. And there's some additional history, and Mr. Allen and I have talked in terms that because of how fragile people are, that we won't go into some of the details about folks that lost their jobs with the state of Minnesota and et cetera. Yes. But your question, caller, was an excellent one, and we certainly appreciate you calling it.
Well, the black leaders need to step up here, you know.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Okay, let's go to the hello, caller. You're on the On Point with Ron Edwards and Don Allen.
Hello?
Hello. You're live on the air.
Is that me this time?
This is you this time. It's your turn.
Okay, good.
And you want to state your name and where you're calling from?
Sure. This is Jimmy Stroud from the Spokesman Recorder newspaper.
Hey, Mr. Stroud. How are you?
Mr. Stroud, how you doing?
Happy to be alive. You know my M.O.
Okay.
Say, listen, enjoy listening to you guys there. You're full of information, and I've been listening on the phone for a long time trying to get my question in there, and I know you guys covered one segment, but Alex is a personal friend of mine, and we go back to 88 when we were both doing stand-up comedy together.
I used to come and watch both of you guys.
There you go. But
yes.
But more importantly, he has been this is no joke. He has been, as Ron would tell you, very involved with making sure that things are just for the black firefighters, and he's got his position. He earned it on his own merit, not because he was black, not because of anything else. He's good at what he does. And first of all, the one thing I wanted to know was what was the basis for Gary Schiff's argument in saying that. That's part one, and two is it something that's going to happen this Monday, you say, as a hearing? Is it something that we can all come to and encourage people to come out and
okay, let me Mr. Stroud, let me respond to both questions, and I know we have some other callers. First of all, let me do it in reverse. The hearing is Monday at City Hall. I'm pretty sure it's at 9:30. You can always find out by looking at the city's website. It's a 9:30 meeting. It'll be a joint committee meeting of the Public Safety Committee under Don Samuels and the Regulatory Services Committee, because what happens is that the fire department reports to the Public Safety Committee, and the Regulatory Services reports, quote-unquote, to the Regulatory Services Committee. But that hearing will take place at 9:30. Yes, it is open to the public. It has to be open to the public. And at that point, though I think you can go online right now and get the report issued jointly by Chief Jackson and Director Forte. To your first question, Mr. Schiff's motivations, I hear the following story from sources inside of City Hall. One of the things that was taken away from the power of the council when they decided to split up the inspections in 2004 was that inspections, gentlemen and audience participants, inspections is something that can bring a little gravy in, if you know what I mean. And you can use it as leverage. Sometimes it's used as positive leverage. Sometimes it's used as negative leverage. Example, if you're in my war and I decide I don't like the things you're doing, and maybe you haven't been supportive of me, and you, let's say you got a couple of stores, if you will. Let's say you got a couple of computer stores. And all of a sudden, I decide that I want to send the inspectors in to make things hard for you. Okay? But let's say, on the other hand, that you have a couple of eateries or et cetera, and, you know, maybe black folks are complaining about the quality of food, and, you know, they've seen insects and vermin and et cetera, and you really don't care as the representative, as the government representative, you tell the inspectors to stand down. The word is on Mr. Schiff, who has a lot of commercial businesses in his ward, the Ninth Ward, which if you take a look at the map, a lot of businesses out there along Minnehaha and Lake Street and et cetera, that Mr. Schiff, and it's puzzling because he's one of the ones that was okay with the splitting of the inspection responsibilities, but Mr. Schiff feels that he does not have the kind of power that he needs to have to control what inspectors do. Now, that doesn't make it right. In fact, in some jurisdictions, you may get indicted if you fool around and you tell inspectors to put pressure on some people and not on others. But to your question, Mr. Stroud, that is what's being discussed as a motivation. The councilmen want to get back in control of how inspections are handled and use it as a political leverage. Now, I know that that's a sensitive statement for us to make here on this program, because folks are going to say that six people's lives were lost. And by the way, let me just say at the top of this program, my colleague pointed out, as the report pointed out, that it was 24 years ago. People tend to forget that fire 24 years ago took the lives of 8 African Americans, and it was a fire right behind where UROC now sits, for those of you that remember. In fact, there were 6 babies, 6 black children, and 2 adults that perished in that fire. But to your question, sir, I hope that I answered it. The motivation is that the council wants to get back in a little bit better control. They felt that they didn't have that kind of leverage with Chief Jackson, which I think then speaks volumes to his integrity and his interest not to promote corruption. They think that they can handle Rocco Forte in a different manner. I knew and worked with Rocco when he was chief on the Federal Oversight Committee. I think that they misread Rocco Forte. I don't think that Rocco Forte is going to allow the council to meddle with inspections, but only time will tell.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Stroud. Okay. All right. Moving right along here. That was a nice piece there. Moving right along.
And by the way, Coles, we're down to approximately nine minutes and about 40 seconds, right?
Yeah, we have 9 minutes and 40 seconds.
Okay.
We're counting down. And we just
okay.
want to let everybody know our call-in number on a regular basis will be 1-347-426-3904. And we're going to be on the air every Saturday at 5 p.m. And if we change the schedule, we'll certainly get the word out and let you know. And Mr. Edwards also has a show tomorrow on Minneapolis Television Network titled Black Focus, which is on at 5 p.m. And that's Central Standard Time in the Minneapolis cable network here. You can get the show. Channel 17, make sure you tune into that. And also, his blog, theminneapolisstory.com. You have to put the in there, so theminneapolisstory.com, where you can read some of the articles that he puts in the Minneapolis, or actually all the articles that he puts in the Minneapolis spokesman, or the Minnesota spokesman recorder newspaper.
Thank you.
It's a great outlet, a great thing to get news out. Myself, I have the Independent Business News Network, which is IBNN.com. And you can see current events. And getting back to
leaders,
current events here,
yeah.
I'm just gonna just touch on some things here in the last 8 minutes or so. But I just happen to be looking over actually my publication here and just seeing some things that were kind of shocking. And I told you, Mr. Edwards, that last week. I think it was, if I'm not mistaken here, on the 18th, I had went over to UROC because I had gotten a telephone call, and UROC is the University of Minnesota's Research and Outreach Center.
Yes, sir.
Located in the heart of North Minneapolis on Penn, right off Penn and Plymouth there, and they were having a light rail, the Botnew Transit Way light rail line meeting that they plan or intend on running that right up Penn Avenue and down Plymouth Avenue. But another funny thing, Mr. Edwards, that I came across is that there's the Plymouth Avenue townhomes. And if you people that have computers that are in the Twin Cities locally here, if you go to the City of Minneapolis website or if you just Google the Plymouth Avenue townhomes, you will see a design for townhomes there that are in the range of $180,000 and $200,000. Developed by an Olson development, and they have a link there, and when you click on a link, it goes to nowhere. So I actually went down to CPED and asked them who is Olson Development, and they said they'll get back with me, and it's been about a week now. And
this is Mike Christensen's operation.
Yes.
Yeah,
and
Mike Christensen,
Mike Christensen. I just wanted to figure it out. I just wanted to figure out who was Olson Development, and with the light rail going on and this new development, where are the people, the black folks and the minority ethnics in North Minneapolis going to live, you know? And so I actually, getting back to my point, I went to this meeting.
Okay.
There were a total of 5 minority ethnic people in the audience. I was the 5th one.
Okay.
And the gentleman there was going to sell him a bill of goods. The very interesting thing is that he slipped because I brought my camera to ask him about the hiring goals and compliance for the minority ethnic community in North Minneapolis that, you know, are in desperate need of jobs because, you know, they've heard from 2007 to now that there's 2,000-3,000 jobs coming every year, and they start the hype
right.
In the spring, and by November the hype is gone, and then they start the hype up again till they get a little bit more money, and then no one ever gets any jobs. And
absolutely.
And so when I asked him that, he says, well, you know, we get federal money, and the DBE program, and I have it on video. If you go to IBNN.com and scroll to the Is It Too Late for Black Folks in North Minneapolis? The Botnew Transit Way is on the Move Without You is the title of the story.
Mm-hmm.
And toward the end of the video that I filmed there, I asked him about goals and compliance, and he went into the DBE, Disadvantaged Business Enterprise. He says, yeah, well, we get federal funds, so we have to be in compliance with goals and compliance as far as it goes to hire people of color. And he says, well, even with the design and architecture. And then he caught himself. You know, he stopped right there. And turned around. I says, okay. And my next question was going to be, well, what firms or African-American firms or black firms or people of color that have firms submitted a bid on the design and architecture which for this transit station and the path and all your initial. And by that time, he had stopped his other gentleman. The other gentleman grabbed him, put him in the back and sat him down, and they started talking about something else. So it was very interesting to see that, but I am looking right now of a map of the light rail line, which is going to run from the Minneapolis Transportation Exchange, which by the Metrodome, down highway, down 19. 19 would be, what, Plymouth Avenue, if I'm not mistaken?
Yeah.
And then go up Penn to and have a Penn and Plymouth station and a Broadway station, a Broadway and Penn station. Now, real quick here in the time remaining, we're going to we have like 5 minutes according to my switchboard here, but and
okay.
I'll go through it real quick. Looking at this map, I'm just estimating because we know that a lot of our people in North Minneapolis rent homes and they're not homeowners, but by estimate, just by looking at the map, you're looking at maybe a minimum of 10,000 individuals losing their residence, you know, families, black families in that neighborhood, Hispanic families, Asian families, Somali
mm-hmm.
families.
Mm-hmm.
And you just look at this. Another point I'd like to make, if they're going down Penn Avenue compared to the Hiawatha line, that's a wide kind of area there. What's going to happen to North Point, the Minneapolis Urban League, and KMOJ?
Well, let me give you an example. What you would do coming down, and these are some of the plans that are at play, you would swerve to some degree. Example, the Urban, because the Urban League building is actually owned by the city of Minneapolis. And so what you would do is you would swerve it out and then bring it back. You would go by North Point, but you could swerve it back because one of the things they've been trying to do is to push Mr. Estes off of his spot there on the corner.
Yes.
It is one of the reasons why Buck Knight's dream of having the district's headquarters at Plymouth and Penn fell through because, unfortunately, no one told him there were greater plans at play, and those plans are the for the line. Now, let me say this, and quickly, we have about a minute and a half before you close us out. It's interesting that they, and I know I'm appreciative that you went to that meeting and have captured it on film. I find it fascinating they're talking about a station at Broadway and Penn. I'm trying to figure out where they're going to put it in close proximity to the Ackerberg building and the so-called soundproof headquarters of radio station KMOJ.
Exactly. Well, you know, that's another very interesting thing with our recent stories, and we're soon going to come out with part four on KMLJ, which will kind of just blow things out of the water. But I remember a few years ago when Minnesota Public Radio raised all kinds of hell because they were thinking about running the light rail in front of their building. And if you have a broadcast facility, you have to be soundproof. You can't hear the fire trucks going by.
As they did when they were out south, right?
Yeah. When, you know, it's just the FCC regulations. I can go into years of that, but I'm not going to do it right now. But, you know, it didn't make any sense. And is that station on the corner of Penn and Broadway equipped to handle a change with a light rail and the vibrations and the different kind of components that will go through there and cause havoc on their broadcasting?
I think that is absolutely correct, particularly in light of the fact that there is not a confirmation by KMLJ of where their transformer and transmitters are, as well as how they communicate with those particular items. They basically do it by telephone line. I don't know that I'd be wanting to try to do that with the construction. You've got to understand, and I know we're down to the last minute and a half, when you start talking in terms of building the light rail, you're talking about going down also into the ground because you're actually talking in terms of reinforcement and et cetera. And for those that know our community, the water table in North Minneapolis is pretty high. And so you've got to come up with some heck of a things with respect to pile driving and et cetera and to make sure that you've got the kind of foundation to run those big, heavy trains so that you don't have a catastrophe. I think this is something, Don, we may want to take a look at our program next week.
Yes. Actually, I want to remind everybody, next week we're going to be skipping next Saturday because of an event that's going on. I'm actually getting married next Saturday.
Congratulations.
And you're coming to the wedding, Mr.
Yes.
The week after, which is the week June 5th at 5 o'clock, we will be live on the air again.
All right.
We'd like to thank everybody for tuning in and listening. I'm Don Allen with co-host Ronald A. Edwards. And we appreciate you listening to On Point on Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you, and stay strong. Thank you, Mr. Allen.
Older than the sea, the about the love she brings to me.